Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast-to-coast. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's our good friend. Joan, welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning to you. It's good to have you back, and thank you for bringing this week's Kiplinger letter to us. The president, you could tell yesterday, as you saw him around the country, spoke to a group of employees at Boeing yesterday, you could tell that that his mind was a little bit less occupied with the the strains of the war. You could tell he was a little looser yesterday. The major fighting is wound down in Iraq right now. There's still a lot of our men and women in harm's way over there, though, Joan, as you know.
No question.
But the president seemed to be turning his attention a little more towards local issues because the war is kind of winding down, isn't it?
Well, right. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, whether Baghdad is going to fall or what kind of opposition that the troops are going to face. So even though he's reluctant to declare the war over, and I think he's right about that, I can imagine that he must be relieved at this point.
Well, and even if he's got everybody doing their own job and he doesn't have to be focusing on something right now, even though I know his mind was focusing on it, there is a point beyond which if you go, you're unseemly in the way you behave, and so there's a role to play, isn't there, really, when we've got men and women at risk over there.
Right, and I don't even think it's a role, because I would think if I was the commander-in-chief and I had sent the boys and girls over, many of them to give their lives, I would be very preoccupied with
Absolutely.
That.
No, I agree with you, I certainly didn't mean to.
No, I know.
There is something that he is the president of the United States, which means that he has to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and his administration has to be able to do that. And that's, to me, that would seem to be one of the hardest things, is to keep your war game face on and still have to deal with the other things. I mean, look what we've got in the United States right now. We've got the economy's tough. He's trying to get a major budget issue through the through Congress, and SARS. Don't forget SARS. I mean, we've got all that going on.
Boy, and SARS is pretty huge. I realize it hasn't hit the United States in large numbers yet, but it's just over the border in Canada. It's running rampant in Toronto.
Well, I heard that recently it's getting out of hand in Toronto.
Yes, it is. They thought they had it under control. Now they realize that it's not at all.
This is just in the last couple of days, isn't it?
Right. Well, they realized that someone had spread it to a whole bunch more people. The problem is that the workers, the hospital workers or the patients who are presenting it are one thing, but there are people who are in the incubation stages that are spreading it.
Apparently, it's highly, highly contagious.
Yes.
I mean, highly communicable, it's almost terrorizing, isn't it, to the degree that it can spread.
But the good news is that they've cracked the genetic code for it. So
yeah.
I think that, you know, that they can move faster than they have in previous diseases to try to come up with, you know, antidotes and
mm-hmm.
things.
Could there be some major blessings to come from this? I mean, as frightening as it is, as much of a toll as it's taken on the global economy, the airlines are in tough shape because of SARS, and as well as other things. But could the way we focused on this, is it possible that there could be a bunch of ancillary benefits to come from this?
You mean in terms of lessons learned?
Well, lessons learned, but also
yeah.
medicine. In terms of, you know, well, you know what? Hey, this we just had a breakthrough in SARS, but we just found out that we can also cure the cold now.
Well, I sure hope so.
You know what I mean? That kind of thing could happen. In other words, a lot of times it seems to me that, Joan, that research, medical research, and this is kind of off the letter, but medical research, the money goes to where the squeaky wheel is.
Oh, right, that's true.
So, but anyway, the president's got all that on his plate, and also, you guys point out that the 2004 elections are coming up in his face faster and faster.
That's right. You know, we're almost halfway through 2003, so he's got to start to be thinking about that.
Yeah. And of course, the good news for the incumbent is the best way for him to think about it is just to be successful in his job.
Do his job, right.
I mean, he doesn't have to... I remember thinking, remember that movie where Michael Douglas was the president and Richard Dreyfuss was the contender? And
oh, yes, and the American president.
Dreyfuss kept going around saying, I want to be president. And Douglas's character, you know, in one of his indignant speeches says, I am the president.
President, right.
So when you are, you got the bully pulpit,
that's right,
don't you?
Sure.
So the other guys have to go around saying, this is what I'm going to do. And so as long as you're the president, you can say, this is what I am doing, and people like it, then that's the best thing. And so,
and see, now the president is actually going back on sort of, not on the campaign trail, but he's doing more fundraising. He had stopped that as the war mm-hmm. really heated up, and now it seems more, you know, appropriate to be able to go back and do that again.
He was definitely on the stump yesterday.
And yeah.
Not in terms of politicking. As much as just trying to, in terms of election politicking, as much as he was out there on the stump for his program, his tax cut package.
Right.
So, one of the things that I saw, you're talking about the 2004 election, Joan, I saw yesterday that if the election were held today, that he would win California.
Well, I'd be curious to know right after the Gulf War what his father's approval rating was in California.
Well, I thought that's what you were supposed to know. I thought you would know that, Joan.
Let me check on
that. What have we got you here for, Joan?
I don't know. I have no idea.
You know, you're probably right.
Probably.
But, you know, that is an interesting, would be an interesting harmony to see, wouldn't it? The harmony of the two presidential Bush first terms, wouldn't
because
it?
Certainly his national approval rating, I believe, was sky high immediately after.
Oh, it's like 110% or something,
right?
Like that.
Right,
something ridiculous. Off
which
the scale.
Is why almost no one wanted to run against him, except an obscure governor from Arkansas.
You know, you know what I think the difference is, though. I don't think George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush 41. I don't think he stood for as much personally as this president does. Do you get that idea? You see what I mean?
Well, I don't know. I always thought that he was better at foreign policy than he was at domestic policy.
Well, and that was where his credential was, wasn't it?
That's where his credentials were, exactly.
But the thing is if you remember the debate, I mean, I just think that I don't think that he had as much personal, I mean, not that he wasn't a patriot or anything like that. It's just that I just think that there's more fire in this Bush's belly.
I just think he has better advisors.
Probably. Now, that's probably so. Stand by. Quick break. 20 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. Stay with us.
I'm just beginning to see.
Getting busy with it.
All right. We're back. Getting jiggy with our good friend, Joan Pryde.
What the heck was that?
senior editor with the Kiplinger editor's post. Well, Joan, you said you wanted new music.
What is it?
that's Will Smith.
Oh.
Getting jiggy with Joan. We got to get you out of your office there a little
not
bit more.
Not for that.
We got to get
that.
You out.
Oh,
all right. Well, one of the things we're talking about is the president's environment that he finds himself in, Joan, with the war. You know, we got to stop and say for a minute, congratulations, sir, to you and your team, to Tommy Franks and to all the men and women over there who just absolutely made us proud every moment. I mean, Joan, we saw them one moment and they were fighting and they were winning and some of them got hurt, some of them were captured, some of them died but they fought and they did their job. And then the next minute we saw them and they were picking up and carrying to an ambulance people that they had just fought with. And we saw them doing so many things that I think it showed the world that Americans are good people. Fundamentally, we're good people. We want the best for other people. Don't you think the military demonstrated that?
Well, they achieved their objectives, absolutely.
Yeah, So you're only half agreeing with me. Is that what you're saying?
I still thought we were going to talk about the letter.
I know. But, well, I am. Well, I am talking about the letter. But anyway, all right, well, let's talk about the home front. We're going to go back to the home front. Tell us what happened this last week in the Senate.
Well, what happened in the Senate, to try to make a long story short, the Senate has essentially refused to go along with the House in terms of the size of the president's tax cut. They're not passing the tax bill at this point. They're passing the broad budget outlines that allow for a certain amount of tax cuts.
We really need to come down to a smaller grid coordinate there on who's not going along with who there, Joan.
Okay, well, I'm getting to it. Just give me a minute.
Okay, all right.
I'm trying to lay things out here because the House has gone along with the president's full amount, which is
100%.
$726 billion. The Senate has stuck with $350 billion because there's a group of great Americans, senators who refuse to be pushed by political winds, who are sticking to their guns, and who are not voting with the Republican majority to push through the higher number.
And you forgot to mention misdirected.
That wasn't part of what I was going to say.
Okay.
But
all
in
right.
any case, but the big news this week, that's kind of the old news. The news this week is that the president has partially caved and said he would accept a tax bill of 550, which is pretty far down from 726.
Well, the sad news is the people that Joan are talking about are from the president's own party.
Well, it depends on what perspective you're coming from, whether that's happy or sad.
Well, regardless, I mean, if it's the president's
own... No, not regardless.
No, what I'm saying is...
If standing with their principles.
If it's the president's own party, that's my point, is he can't even get...
So they should only be in lockstep with whatever he wants to do.
No, it's just that it's interesting. From a political standpoint, it's sad. I'm not talking about the fundamental value of the issue. I'm talking about from a political standpoint. He can't get Olympia Snow and Voinovich of Ohio and Leaping Lincoln of Rhode Island to go along with him.
Well, and, it's sad for him, sure.
Yeah, that's my point. So they're locked in at 350, but he's now saying he'd accept 550. That's where he is right now, I think.
Right. So. He's saying 550, which privately they're saying he's realizing it's going to be more like 350.
Right. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, and I think didn't Kiplinger predict a 50% a few months ago? Didn't you guys predict about a 50% that he'd get about half of what he thought he was going to get?
We've been saying that the tax letter actually, and we've of course piggyback on our tax letter. The tax letter has been predicting the 350 level for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm. So Kiplinger once again
ahead of the game
has lurched uncontrollably to the truth.
Maybe the president read the letter and said, "Gee, I've got no shot at 726. I'm going to stick."
No, I think you guys gave Olympia Snow the number she needed.
Well, there you go.
I think that's what happened. I think Olympia Snow was reading your letter and she said, "Well, if Kiplinger says it, you know, you guys got to be a little more careful about what the numbers you throw around here. You don't know what kind of influence."
I didn't realize people were really paying attention.
Right. Right. Other things, Joan, that Mr. Bush has in his plan is the retirement savings programs. He's trying to get some of those things through in a pretty unique way. And you guys say that's not going to fly.
Well, that's right, because that was something that was part of the broad package that was proposed originally. I called it the alphabet soup, and that was actually pulled back by his administration within days of offering it. So that was sort of a very confusing moment, but I guess the point we're trying to make here is just because that was pulled back, it doesn't mean you won't see anything in the retirement area this year, because there's some provisions that they failed to pass last year that I call sort of the post-Enron 401k provisions that they're going to do this year.
Right. Well, the thing that gets me about our politicians up there, Joan, in the House and the Senate, both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, is that they're hiding behind the fact that they don't like deficits. They won't lower our taxes. They won't give us our capital. They won't give small business owners their working capital back, because they're using the red herring of deficits. But what they aren't telling you, and what a lot of people don't realize, is that one of the reasons we have deficits is because they can't quit spending.
Well, I beg to differ.
Well, you can do that on the other side of these messages, and only because I'm such a nice guy. 29 after, we're going to be right back with Joan Pryde. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with us this morning. Or this afternoon or tonight, if that's when you're listening, because you very well may be. If you're listening to the archive or the replay, or if you're listening to whenever the radio, your local radio station is picking this show up, we appreciate you being here. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's Joan, you're kind of in a mood today. What's going on?
I don't know. Fighting back.
Was it something I said,
or is everything you said?
Are you just are you an equal opportunity grump today? Big banks are also weighing in a little bit on some of the new legislation that's going on. They're trying to block the interest bearing business checking right now, aren't they?
Right, and as your listeners probably know, small businesses have wanted interest bearing checking accounts for years and still don't have them, due to a quirk in the law.
Mm-hmm.
And Congress is trying to give it to them, but it hasn't worked out. And one of the reasons is because big banks are already getting around the law
right.
with something called sweep accounts. And so they don't want others cutting into their business, you know, the small community banks who also would love to offer these accounts but can't.
Who are the best friend small business has ever had? The
Okay, now I'll agree with you on that.
Good. We finally had found something. Independent community banks, folks, are the best friend of any small business. And I certainly recommend, you've heard me say this 1,000 times, if you have one banking relationship, you need to have it with an independent community bank. If you have two banking relationships, at least one of them needs to be an independent community bank. And of course, Joan, as you've told us many times before, the rule against interest-bearing checking for businesses goes back to the Depression, doesn't it?
Right. And at the time that when that rule was made, it also covered individual accounts. But about, I think it was about 20 years ago or so, they changed that law for individuals. That's why you can have an interest-bearing checking account now. Any of us can. But if
right.
you're a business, you still can't.
Well, and the purpose during the Depression was because they were trying to stabilize the banking industry and the financial market.
Well, banks were engaging in bidding wars for your money, and it was getting out of hand.
That people were moving the money around for every
right.
little bitty increase in rate,
right.
and it was destabilizing the banking industry.
Exactly.
So they had to put a stop to that. But now it's just pure politics, isn't it?
No. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So okay, let's move over and talk a little bit more about healthcare, Joan. Or let's talk about healthcare, I should say. What you know, one of the things this Medicare prescription drug benefit that they've been studying for some time now. It hasn't been that long ago I don't remember if Kiplinger said this, but a lot of people were thinking that it was going to become a law.
Well, you know, it's a huge issue, and it's been around for a while. It's something that the seniors are really asking for. So it's kind of a surprise that they're having this much trouble working something out. But there are those, I guess, in Congress who think not having a prescription drug benefits them politically more than having one does.
Well, you guys say it's not going to happen this year.
Right.
Bad news for the older folks, which includes my parents.
That's trend mine too.
Yeah, I mean they spend a lot of money every month on drugs. And,
it's crazy.
And, it really upsets them. You know, even the elderly people who have the money who can afford it, there's something about how much it costs them that shocks them.
Well, and because they're very thrifty people who weathered the Depression.
My parents. Will get a bill from a hospital stay or something like that that Medicare or their secondary insurance will pay 100%, and it'll still upset them.
No kidding, to
get that number.
Yeah, I know.
So it's very interesting. Let's move on down and talk about the human resources aspect of things that are going on today, Joan. This is very interesting. That you guys report on the current welfare to work rules. What's happening with that?
Well, the welfare reform law, needs to be reauthorized. It needs a comprehensive reauthorization. But there just isn't enough time to do it. So I think what they're going to do is just extend the current law for a while because it's I think it's expiring actually at the end of June.
This is the law that did so much to get people off of welfare and into the marketplace, isn't it?
Right. And there's tweaking that needs to be done, but just letting it expire would be the worst thing to have happen. So they're going to extend it for now and then work on the reauthorization later.
Another thing is the comp time in lieu of overtime issue right now.
And that's huge. And I think that may have some legs this year. It's been a while, but this
the Democrats are against it, though, comp time in lieu of overtime.
Right. Well, it's because it's the unions are against it.
It's a union issue, yeah.
Now, Jim?
What?
I'm worried you're about to get on your soapbox.
No, we're coming up on a break. And see, I know I'm fine with this. It's okay. I mean, I think that the union's day is done. It's a dinosaur.
Go down to the next line.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we come back after these messages. It's 20 Till. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17 Till. Let me remind you about the show coming up straight ahead. Rick Maurer is going to join us, followed by Alan Friedman, and then Skip Miller. And I'll tell you a little bit more about what those guys are going to talk about a little bit later on. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And Joan Pride has a website called Kiplinger. She and her outstanding organization called Kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. And Joan, you've got four about a weekly and three biweekly letters, the Washington letter that comes out every week and the agriculture tax and California letter that come out biweekly. Those are three different ones. And then they have a magazine.
That's right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Or you can call this toll-free number if you'd like to subscribe.
Right, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And folks, again, as I said before, check out the website because they've got some interesting stuff there that you don't even have to subscribe to. You get some good information there, and it's good stuff. But also, don't forget the 30-day free trial that they'll offer you if you want to subscribe to anything that they have. And also, the magazine's available on newsstands. Joan, what was the next thing that you wanted to talk about on the jobs and workers section there?
No, I was going to skip over to the next section, actually.
Oh, the Enron fallout?
Yeah, but I didn't think you'd want to do that.
We can talk about that.
Okay.
This is the part about more public firms are going private, and one of the reasons is because of all of the things that they're being required, public companies are having to do these days.
Right. Well, it's sort of a perfect storm because one of the problems is a lot of these companies went public in the 90s when everything was going so well, and now they're not meeting growth targets. They're upsetting shareholders, and it's just, you know, adding all this the new requirements on public companies from last year's, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley corporate reform law. It's just not worth it. So
we just talked about that with Andrew Sherman last half hour.
Okay.
But Joan, he points out that you know, we're not going to be able to run away from these public companies are not going to be able to run away from Sarbanes-Oxley just by going private. That they're going to be plenty of things where Sarbanes-Oxley is going to filter down into the private sector.
Well, that's true, but there's a lot of SEC paperwork that they won't have to do anymore.
That's right.
And what we're talking about, apparently, this trend is mainly among companies that are just above the threshold. Going private doesn't mean getting rid of all of your shareholders. It means going below the 300 shareholder threshold of the SEC.
And folks, going public, you know, back in the 90s, Joan, everybody thought that was such a great thing. It was automatic ticket to ride to wealth, you know. But the thing is, being a public company, I know some people who own public companies, and it's a royal pain in the you-know-what to keep up with all the stuff.
I'm sure. Yeah.
It is really ridiculous. And a little company that's public is just, I don't know how they do it. I mean, it's just out of hand.
I understand that Andrew Sherman is probably talking about a lot of the good governance things that have come out of Sarbanes-Oxley private firms will want to do, but they sure ain't going to have to make all those filings and the CEO certification requirement and all that stuff.
And the audits.
All the different
audits and everything, securities audits. Let's move over and talk about the government's cracking down on some people who they say are cheating the government out of some money.
Right. Now, and what we're talking about, since everybody just filed their tax returns, they'll be interested in hearing this. we're talking about the cost of the underground economy, you know, people paying in cash for services and people not recording income on their on their tax return. And we're saying that the uncollected amounts in 2003 will amount to $200 billion.
Yeah, I know about that underground group that you're talking about. There's also a lot of bartering that goes on that the government doesn't really like very much, where I do something for you, you do something for me, but no money changes hands. And some of that is actually against the law, I think. But
some bartering is legal, and there's also tax, you know, there's tax consequences to it.
Exactly. There are. But, Joan, I just think the $200 billion number is high. That really wasn't your number, though, was it?
Not mine personally, no.
I mean was that Kiplinger's number, or is that something that you guys got from the IRS?
I don't know if we got it from the IRS, but I think you're right. I think we got it from somewhere else.
Yeah. But I just think that I just don't see that. I mean, I think that's, but one thing you point out is that number would pay for a lot of things. It paid for the war and Homeland Security.
Boy, I know, $200 billion. That's real money
and that's a year.
In Washington.
A billion here and a billion there, right?
Right.
But I don't know. I just think I don't think that there's that much opportunity there. I would like to see how whoever came up with that number, I mean, they had to have had some kind of a methodology to do that. And I'd like to see that. It'd be interesting to me. And might not be to anybody else, but it would be to me. Sales and profits for online retailers are going to jump in the coming years. That's what Kiplinger says this week.
Right, and we're saying that finally high-speed web access is going to be spreading in among individuals in their homes, and that's going to be huge for retailers.
Only a year ago, that number was around 12%, homeowners with big pipes, the DSL or cable modem. Only a year ago, it was about 12%. You guys say, Kiplinger says, that by the end of next year, almost half of households will have it.
That seems rather high, but I guess so.
It's really emerging. It's really taking off. And one of the reasons I think it's taking off is the companies are putting together some pretty good packages for they finally figured out how to make a product that the consumers will like. And hopefully one of the good things that will happen, Joan, in addition to people being able to buy more online, which they're going to be doing, is that maybe it'll encourage people to create more content for the internet that can be streamed in the high speed access pipes. We're going to take a quick break. Chicago will take us out. It's 10 till. Stay with us. Back at 7 till, visiting with our good friend Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's move over to page 4 and talk about the economy a little bit. You guys say that interest rates by the Fed might be cut one more time soon?
Well, we're saying it can't be ruled out, which to me reads that, you know, it's possible but not likely.
They meet again in May.
Right.
The FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, meets on the 6th of May, and I don't think they're going to do it in May. I may be wrong, but I don't think they're doing it. But you also go on to say that you think that they'll start raising later in the year.
Right. That's interesting, because we're not ready for an increase yet, I don't think.
Mm-mm. But the deficits are going to put pressure on that, aren't they?
Well, that's what's bothering Greenspan. That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's what he's concerned about right now. That's one of the things that you guys had a pretty significant story behind the letter. That's one of the things you get when you subscribe, folks, to the letter. You get access to their online capability, which has the story behind the snippet. And this is one of the good ones of the letter this week, Joan, is how Greenspan feels about this. He's worried about the deficit, which is approaching, what, $400 million?
Billion.
I mean, 400 billion. I was concerned about the number, and I wasn't realizing I had the wrong denomination.
And there's some talk that it could be as much as 500 billion.
Yeah, yeah. And what they know is in order to pay for that, the government has to issue bonds, and in order to make the bonds attractive, they've got to raise the interest rate on them.
Exactly.
And that's what creates the higher interest rates. And with the economy down, that's what you define as stagflation, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's it.
Yeah. So that's a real worry. And but now let's get back to where we sort of forgot to talk about the your argument with me about the spending issue. I say that we don't have a revenue problem. We got a spending problem in Washington.
Do have a spending problem. There's too much pork barrel spending. But even if you wiped out the non-defense discretionary budget, just wiped it out, you still don't end your deficit problem, because your big problems are, number one, the entitlement programs,
mm-hmm.
Medicare, Medicaid, and number two, the interest on the debt. So this is just all the entitlement stuff is just spiraling out of control, and no one is becoming a statesman or using any leadership to, mm-hmm. to act on this stuff.
I agree with you. You're right about that. And
so that
and,
was my soapbox for the day.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, Joan, because the truth is we all need to be reminded that Washington – When our politicians go to Washington to manage the finances of the country, they're really only clucking over a really small number of our little chickens, aren't they?
That's right.
Like, is like 25% or something like that of the overall budget?
It's amazing. And that's, and especially when you're talking about discretionary spending, non-defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's so small a slice of the pie. And the only way that some of these entitlement problems are going to get solved is if somebody is willing to take an unpopular stand,
mm-hmm.
and even be voted out of office for what they do.
Right. Yeah. I don't see a lot of that up there, though. Do you?
No, I see none of it.
There's a conspicuous dearth of that kind of leadership, isn't there?
Definitely. Both parties.
And more's the pity.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move on down and talk about global politics. Again, let's get back into the war just a little bit and some of the issues around it. Kiplinger says that Bush will not hold a grudge against our neighbors, Canada and Mexico, because they didn't support us in the war with Iraq.
Fine, as long as he holds a grudge against France, I don't care.
France and Germany and Russia.
Right.
Yeah,
mainly France.
Boy, I'll tell you, it's. I don't think the French really appreciated how much we would get, how ticked off we would get.
Well, and they're surprised that they're having trouble. They're having trade problems now, and
right.
they're surprised.
Somebody said something the other day. It's a wacky world when the Germans don't want to fight and the French call us arrogant.
Right. Everything's turned around then.
Everything's upside down. That's exactly right. You say that getting Iraq back on its feet could take as much as 5 years.
Well, you know, Iraq didn't get to its point. This point. Overnight, you know, there's been
generations,
years, and just Saddam, the whole time Saddam Hussein was in power, the country was going downhill.
Half of the population has never known anything else.
That's true.
They're so young because he killed all the older people.
Right, and built his opulent palaces and spent a lot of money, at the expense of his people.
The good news is, though, they're one of the most literate of the nations over there. They're on 150 billion barrels of oil reserves, one of the wealthiest reserves in the world.
And yes, and they're just about the only Arab country that has both plenty of water and plenty of oil.
Yeah.
So they've got the infrastructure and as you point out, the literacy to do it.
So maybe five years actually probably wouldn't be a bad one. I hope it happens in 5 years. Thanks, Joan. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, with Kiplinger Letters. She'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military. Standing a post, God bless you. God be with you. This is Jim Blassingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.